And welcome back. We're talking once again with Michael Roll, live from England. Very important conversations, these. A group of British scientists, including two astrophysicists, a thermodynamicist, and other professional researchers, are conducting experiments right now, these days, these weeks, and solving complex equations that they believe furnish conclusive and irrefutable proof of human survival of bodily death. And Michael Roll has been in the forefront for over two decades now of pushing this issue in the face of ridiculously overwhelming odds. And now, after long, long years of travail, we are beginning to see things change. I am personally extremely happy for Michael and his colleagues and those who have fought with him. I think this is an extraordinary victory, and it is just beginning. We ended the last hour. I was going to mention a little bit more about some of these mediums. It's a fascinating field, but before I do, Michael, I do regular programs on electronic voice phenomena, which has been known about for over 50 years now. And some of the voices that are being imprinted on both digital and audio handheld recorders are enough to make your hair stand up. Even if one is bald, I think the hair would want to stand up. It's and every voice, as I've said so many times, is different. The pitch, the timbre. There are children, there are men, there are women, there are those with accents. This is an extraordinary part of this big puzzle, which is rapidly being solved. These voices are coming from human beings, people, who are in the extended, non-visible portion of our universe, who are speaking back to us. And I know you know about EVP and have studied it for years.
Yes, the invisible part of the universe is teeming with life, and all these experiments are proving it. I'm so pleased for the EVP people because they have been working as hard on their field of research as I have, and now at last they're having the big breakthrough, and they, of course, have got the scientific backup with the mathematics to prove that there are people there. What we must get through to your and the listeners is that what's driven me on. I wouldn't have been able to fight like I have for 20 years if I hadn't taken part in repeatable experiments like Sir William Crookes took part in. Mm-hmm. That's the dynamo that drives me on, because when I caught hold of people from the etheric world at these experiments, that I thought to myself, I must tell the world about this, rather similar to the story of the disciples of Jesus. They must have witnessed the same thing that I did. One of those disciples must have been a materialization medium for this story to come about, where Jesus fully materialized after he was killed, mm-hmm. and said to his disciples, look, catch hold of me, feel me. Well, that's the same thing happened to me with somebody from the etheric world, and I was just as fanatical, really, as those disciples to get this through to everybody in the world.
I can fully understand that.
And this can't be fate. This is what's so wonderful about a full materialization phenomena. Because imagine somebody really close to you. You must have lost somebody really close to you, Jeff. Mm-hmm. If they fully materialized, you would know immediately if you're talking to this dead loved one of yours that's really close to you.
Of course.
See, it can't, however clever the magician, they couldn't fool you into thinking you were talking to your grandfather who you knew intimately. For more than a second or so, you would know immediately if it's your grandfather.
Correct.
But we've done these experiments. Six recently deceased people were materializing with the medium that I worked with, Rita Gould from Leicester in England here. And we got the families of the people who were materializing all reunited with them. And they all confirmed beyond any shadow of doubt that they have been talking to their loved ones over and over again on repeatable experiments over a number of years, you see. And that's all now in my report in the Society for Psychical Research magazine. And the most important experiment was done by Alan Cleaver, a journalist. the old materialization medium, Helen Duncan, who was killed in 1956,
right,
fully materialized every time this medium, Rita Gould, gave a demonstration. And, of course, Alan Cleaver carried out the brilliant scientific exercise of making sure he got Helen Duncan's daughter there to check her out, Gina Brearley. And after an hour of talking to her mother, she reported to Alan Cleaver that was beyond any shadow of doubt, I have been speaking to my mother, proving that she is still very much alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is now all in my report. That's the report that they've been censoring for 20 years, but now they have published it, you see.
Wow, and that report is well worth sending around to all of your friends who are interested in this field, EVP researchers, whatever. Look in the guests section at the top of my homepage under Michael Roll's name, and you'll see Proof for Life After Death paper. And if you take that link, paper, it will take you to the paper we're talking about. So it's all there.
It gives such hope to people, Jeff, doesn't it, who have lost loved ones and are terminally ill, for example, that they've got something to look forward to. When my dad was dying, he turned to my mother and said, "Oh, you're right, Joe, I can see my mother and father at the bottom of the bed. They're waiting for me." This is much better than resting in peace waiting for a judgment day, isn't it, Jeff?
Right, right. I just remember all the books that I've had the authors of which on the program over the years. The book's amazing. Dr. Michael Sabum, a heart surgeon, heart specialist, his book on life after death, extraordinary. I mean, these people who are right there interfacing with people who are transitioning often come away changed for life and changed for death, too, for that matter.
Pardon if it wasn't pun. For the Internet, this wouldn't be getting through to millions of people, but it is now.
Okay. You have in the past, during our conversations, expressed an invitation, a desire for any competent, capable, legitimate spiritualization, spiritual mediums, materialization mediums, other good mediums to come forward and contact you. Have you had much luck, Michael?
Yes, we've got a few in the pipeline, but as soon as we get another one of the caliber of Helen Duncan or Rita Gould, as you know, we're going to clam up completely, because we've now got our scientific team from Cambridge University who will go in and film everything that's taking place. So the first the world will know about it is when they publish their findings, like Sir William Crookes did in 1874. This is what our scientific team will do. They'll publish the experiment showing recently deceased people
right.
being reunited with their loved ones. And we haven't got to worry about money here, because we're working on university grants. So the grants are all available from the universities,
uh-huh.
So that is all taken care of. So if one of these mediums comes forward, it'll all be taken care of.
It's
and
important.
And we'll look after them. We'll take great care of them. No harm
yes.
will ever come to the medium.
Well, that's exactly the point, because we look at the tragedy, the call it a murder, if you want, of Helen Duncan.
Yeah, exactly.
And for those of you wondering about that, do a Google search, read about Helen Duncan. But briefly, she was a truly gifted materialization medium who was, shall we say, intentionally interrupted by the police during one of her mind states, her altered states, and literally didn't survive it.
No, and if she had been a fake, she wouldn't have been injured. The police broke the doors down, and the etheric people that had materialized, forming a sort of ectoplasm around them, rushed back into the medium, and that's what killed her. And when she materialized in front of me in 1983, Jeff, I said to Helen Duncan, "I'm very worried that the same thing may happen to this medium here, Rita Gould, that happened to you."
Uh-huh.
And then she told me the true story, how this came about, because she was making the terrible mistake of charging people money
yeah.
to witness this phenomena. And that's a big mistake. And the Rita Gould that I was working with was forbidden to take one penny for that reason. And Helen Duncan said, "I was warned by my etheric team that I was going to be interrupted during the..."
Mm.
But she said, that meant letting all these people down that have paid all this money to come and witness my
oh.
mediumship from all over England, and I didn't feel I could let them down. So I went ahead against the advice of my etheric team, and that's what happened.
She said,
"Learning by these terrible mistakes in the past, and that's why we've forbidden this medium to take one penny. The only money that can be taken for something as important as this, that actually proves survival, is through the universities, and it will all be done by university grants. So the medium won't have to worry about money. It'll all be taken care of by these grants. I mean, if they can give $150,000 to Professor Richard Wiseman for ripping the whole subject apart, they can give $150,000.
Can you believe that? $150,000.
$150,000 Wiseman was given, and of course he's in the forefront of everything. He pops up on television all over the place, just rubbishing the whole idea of survival.
Well, he's your resident paid debunker is what he is.
That's right, and Susan Blackmore was given $60,000. So the money is there, but this time it will be going towards proving survival, not ripping it apart.
Right. So
things are changing completely.
Well, I know Gary Schwartz at the university in Arizona is doing marvelous work. They are trying to get, as you are trying to do, to get this on videotape, somehow
Absolutely.
Recorded.
Yeah, I'm in regular touch with Professor Gary Schwartz. He's a first-class chap.
Oh, he's a great man, yeah.
He's been over here in England quite often. Yeah.
Oh, he has? Good. And,
yes.
Yeah, he's been a guest several times and always just wonderful conversations.
Oh, he's been on your program, that's
Oh, great. Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, okay, we'll pause. We have a break here again. I would urge all of you to read Michael Roll's papers, explore his websites, especially those of you who are still struggling with the pain and grief of having lost someone, and that's just about everybody nowadays. So please understand, this is extremely important information, to put it mildly. Be right back. Okay, another delightful section of Michael Roll's remarkable website is called Spirit Forms, and in that particular essay, taken from Gilbert Roller's book, Voice from Beyond, 1975 publication date, Popular Library, New York, this letter from Sir William Crookes appeared in spiritualistic journals in March of 1874. These spiritualistic journals, by the way, Michael, must have been about the hottest properties, probably like People magazine is now, or Time magazine.
Yes, you can see why it upset the establishment. My goodness, no wonder they turned on him.
here's a little quote from Sir William Crookes himself, which I assure you bring to you word for word as it was written by the great scientist. He said, on March 12th, during a seance here, after Katie had been walking amongst us. Now, Michael, again, tell us who Katie was.
Yeah, Katie King was the person who materialized every time Florence Crook, the medium, gave a demonstration. Just one person materialized at the Crook's experiment.
And she was always dressed in white.
Yes, well, there's photographs. Sir William Crookes took photographs of her.
I know that's hard for some of our listeners to believe, but we've done programs in the past, and we have looked at the photographs, and they're, you know, what you have to do is come to the conclusion that Sir William Crookes, I mean, it is, again, as if Stephen Hawking were to turn himself into a complete fraud and phony and throw away a lifetime's achievement. It doesn't happen. That's what Crookes would have had to have done to have been engaged in a farce. On March 12th, during a seance here, after Katie had been walking amongst us and talking for some time, she retreated behind the curtain which separated my laboratory, where the company was sitting, from my library, which did temporary duty as a cabinet. In a minute or two, she came to the curtain and called me to her, saying, "Come into the room and lift my medium's head up. She has slipped down." Katie was standing before me, clothed in her usual white robes and turban like headdress. I immediately walked into the library up to Miss Cook. Katie stepped aside to allow me to pass. I found Miss Cook had slipped partially off the sofa, and her head was hanging in a very awkward position. I lifted her up onto the sofa, and in doing so, had satisfactory evidence, in spite of the darkness, that Miss Cook was not attired in the Katie white costume, but had on her ordinary black velvet dress and was in a deep trance. Not more than 3 seconds had elapsed between my seeing the white-robed Katie standing before me and my raising Miss Cook onto the sofa from the position in which she had fallen. Just another interesting little vignette from
Yes, and then it goes on to say that another time he went on in with a phosphorus lamp and held it up, and he could see the two of them together, side by side.
Right.
Proving that they're totally separate. And, of course, all the opposition can do is just say terrible things about this great scientist.
They're absolutely
desperate. He's a liar, a cheat, a crook, a fraud. And they're so desperate, they even said that he was having sexual relations with Florence Cook, the medium. That's how desperate they were, forgetting that his wife, Crookes' wife, took part in a great many of his experiments.
Mm. How did he continue to pursue this with all vigor right up until the end, or did he back off from it after taking such a pounding for so many years?
Well, no, he published his findings in 1874, then went on to other things. But right up until his dying day in 1919, he categorically stated that he sticks by every single word that he has published, that he backs it to the hilt. He never backed off from it, ever.
We have received, Michael, many, many photographs of what we commonly call ectoplasm, for lack of a better description. It tends to look rather like cigarette smoke in these usually nighttime photographs, flash and so forth. Ectoplasm, I guess, can take on different textures, different densities, depending upon the medium and so forth.
Yeah, I think to explain to people why we have to have this, what they tell us they do, they have to make a temporary sort of spacesuit to teleport somebody in. They can't push somebody into our etheric world, proving they've survived death, without first of all setting up a sort of spacesuit for them to be teleported into.
All right.
So what the scientists in the etheric world do, and it's them who do it, not us, all we can do is observe and report. We haven't got the technology to do this. But what they do, they withdraw this protons, neutrons, and electrons from the medium, and I no doubt other people in the room as well, and make a temporary sort of body to be, so they can push the life force of the etheric person into it. So that's what they did with Katie King. So they made a temporary body of protons, neutrons, and electrons.
And you can see, I think, by extension, what killed Helen Duncan. She was, at that moment, of course, extremely vulnerable, had given up a tremendous amount of her literal atomic substance.
Yeah.
And then these people broke in. And
she died of internal hemorrhaging when the protons, neutrons, and electrons rushed back into her body. So you've got to be terribly careful. So the safety of the medium must be number one priority at all our experiments. And every scientist taking part in these experiments will be scientists who have got nothing to lose from it, and scientists who have already committed themselves, like Professor Peter Wadhams and Professor Josephson, who will be in charge of the experiments. We won't be letting any of the professional wreckers near the medium.
No, as it should be. All right, we'll pause and come back. Oh, and by the way, Peter Wadhams will be a guest here on the 24th to talk about global warming. He is, of course, without question, one of the world's most eminent authorities on the entire issue of global warming and the catastrophe it is visiting on the planet. Back in just a few minutes with Michael Roll. Thank you. Okay, and we're back. Another just amazing paragraph from Sir William Crookes' letter that I want to read you. This, this is amazing. You got to remember, this is Victorian England, right? Formality and all the rest of it. I pass on, this is Sir William Crookes, I pass on now to a seance held last night at Hackney. Katie never appeared to greater perfection, and for nearly 2 hours she walked about the room, conversing familiarly with those present. On several occasions she took my arm while walking, and the impression conveyed to my mind that it was a living woman by my side, instead of a visitor from the other world. That impression was so strong that the temptation to repeat a recent celebration and celebrated experiment became almost irresistible. Feeling, however, that if I had not a spirit, I had at all events at least a lady close to me, I asked her for permission to clasp her in my arms, so as to be able to verify the interesting observations which a bold experimentalist has recently, somewhat verbosely, recorded. Permission was graciously given, and I accordingly did, well, as any gentleman would do under the circumstances. End quote. That's an amazing little paragraph.
Well, that's an extraordinary thing, because the same thing happened at the Rita Gould experiment. We had a beautiful young lady, an opera singer, materializing. She died as an old lady, but she was coming back here as a 20-year-old in her prime. Mm-hmm. And she was the medium's grandmother, Rita Gould's grandmother. She was a famous opera singer in her
day. Oh, really? Oh.
And we were allowed to touch her like Sir William Crookes did as well. And all the men that took part in this experiment, we all fell in love with Laura. And when I met Alan Cleaver, I said, keep your eyes off Laura. He said, I saw her first. So it's really, you get that wonderful feeling.
Now, when here in Crookes' letter, he says, conversing familiarly with those present. In a familiar sentence, but I don't understand, is the voice the same? Michael, did you hear the voice resonating the same way? Was it just as rich, or was it more diaphanous or vaporous?
No, it's exactly the same as our voices now that people are listening to. This is what's so wonderful about a materialization experiment. They come back with exactly the same voices they had on Earth. And at one of the experiments, we had a Dutch lady had come over to witness the phenomena, and her dead son, who died in the army, fully materialized, and they conversed in fluent Dutch to each other. Of course, that's in my reports there as well.
The opera singer
who materializes sings beautiful operatic duets to us. So she catches hold of your hand and sings a lovely operatic aria to you. You know?
When were you involved in the Rita Gould materializations?
This is 1983. My experiments took place. And what, everybody who's been there had the same thing happen to them.
She
sang an aria to everybody who went there.
Were these
exactly the same voices they had on Earth, you see?
Were these materializations in, let me rephrase that, how dark was the room that they appeared in?
Well, it's got to be in pitch black. So Helen Duncan did her experiments in red light. And Sir William Crookes was allowed fluorescent phosphorus lamps into his experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But ever since Helen Duncan was killed in 1956, they've had to refine the method of doing this to try and protect the medium. Helen Duncan told me this. She said, ever since I died in 1956, the scientists over here have been refining the ectoplasm so that if our defenses should be breached, like they were with me, the ectoplasm is now so fine it shouldn't damage the medium too much if it rushes back into her body. And to do that now, we have to operate in pitch black, no red lights anymore. But it doesn't matter in the slightest, because as you know, Jeff, we've now got all the sophisticated equipment to film perfectly in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Infrared cameras,
mm-hmm.
We've got night vision goggles, So it's nothing. It doesn't matter in the slightest how dark it is for our scientific experiments. But to get over the problem, when I first went there with the Rita Gould experiment, what we do, we coat everything in luminous paint. So all the physical objects in the room are covered in a luminous paint, and then we bring luminous clothes in, and when the people fully materialize, they put on the hat and jacket and boots, so we can see them walking about the room, and we can also feel them and touch them, you see. So we got over that problem.
Now this, of course, is all subatomic energy being loaned out from the materialization medium. And my question is, back to the density, physical density of the materialization, it varies, but they can be as dense as regular people. Are they also as warm as regular
people? Absolutely. When I was allowed to touch the people, it was no different to touching anybody on Earth, exactly the same as we are. And they're wearing clothes like us as well. That's what's so mind-boggling about the whole thing. They're able to reproduce their old physical bodies and to make them young or old.
Well, it's like working with a paint canvas of unlimited potential when they
That's
have
right.
This stream
they
of energy.
They have different laws of physics. When this little boy materialized, every time Rita Gould gave a demonstration, a 9-year-old boy called Russell Byrne materialized, and he's been reunited with his parents on something like 100 repeatable experiments. And he said to me, Mike, as my parents lost me when I was 9, that's how I'm coming back to meet them. He says, but normally we walk around here in our prime as sort of 25-year-olds, so they can change their etheric bodies.
Hmm.
It's nice to think I'm going to get my rugby-playing body back, isn't it?
Rugby again? That's a tough sport.
Don't forget, when Professor Peter Wadhams comes on, he's also one of the world's foremost experts on the work of Sir William Crookes.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a moment, ask him about that as well.
Oh, we've been, thanks to you and his kindness, he's joined us in the past. And,
yes.
We have discovered some amazing things through his work.
But he really is genned up on Crookes far more than I am.
Well. Okay, time for a little break here. We'll do that. Come right back. Again, click on Michael Roll's name and do go to his website. There is a ton of wonderful material there. The Campaign for Philosophical Freedom is the name of it. And I'm Jeff Rentz. Be right back. Okay, and when you read the articles on Michael Roll's website, you'll find a lot of text from Sir William Crookes' writings in the Spiritualist magazine or publication back in the 1870s. Amazing reading.
I think, Jeff.
Yes.
We ought to, before we go, let your listeners know why we have to work with a medium. There's my article there, We Can't See Microbes Without a Microscope. As we're dealing with the invisible part of the universe,
yes,
nobody doubts that microbes exist because of the instrument called a microscope. So we can see that the reality exists in the invisible. And also, we can't see the invisible signals hitting our television aerials, but we know they exist because of the medium in our front room, our television set.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have to work with a human medium if we're going to contact people in the invisible part of the universe, because the human mind and brain are a far more sophisticated instrument than anything invented by human beings. So that's the reason. It's mm-hmm. no mystery why we have mm-hmm. to work with a go-between, a medium, if we're going to contact people. They're only acting as an instrument, the same as a microscope or a television set.
I understand.
A lot of people don't understand why we've got to use mediums, but
there's a very
good scientific reason for using them.
Of course. If I were to try to guess, I wouldn't know where to begin. So let me ask you, how many mediums are there? Competent mediums. They don't have to be full-blown materialization mediums, but how many are there out there per 100,000, per half a million, per million population? Do you have any guesstimate?
It's difficult, but the extraordinary thing is that we all have this mediumistic gift, but in some it's much more highly developed than others. As you say, a lot of the children have it naturally when they're very young, and it gets knocked out of them. But we've all got it, because so many people say to me that I'm not a medium, but I saw my mother the other day. But when she says or he said they saw my mother, they were seeing it with a mediumistic eye. If mm-hmm. you and I were standing next to that person, we wouldn't have seen what they saw. So we've all got this mediumistic gift. It seems that if we're terribly upset, we have a sort of lifeline that sort of clicks in, and people do get glimpses of mm-hmm. their dead loved ones. So many millions of people have had that experience, Jeff. So we've all got the gift, the answer to that is, but some are much more gifted than others. And they use that gift to bring enlightenment to mankind, like so many mediums are doing. They're giving wonderful hope and comfort to people who have lost loved ones.
And beware of frauds and phonies, because there are a million of those out there. Here's another paragraph from Crooks, which is very interesting. Apparently, the beings, the souls, the spirits that are manifested here through the borrowing of energy, as directed by the etheric scientists on the other side, the borrowing of energy from the materialization medium, in this case Florence Cook. Katie King took very good care of Florence Cook, realizing that she was apparently at risk, vulnerable at the very least. As this particular paragraph from Sir William Crookes underscores, during the time I have taken an active part in these seances, Katie's confidence in me gradually grew until she refused to give a seance unless I took charge of the arrangements. Very interesting. On entering the cabinet, Miss Cook lies down upon the floor, that's Florence Cook, the medium, with her head on a pillow, and is soon entranced. During the photographic seance, a sideline here, Crooks had 5 different cameras set up, and he used a very low light to try to get pictures of these things, a red light. He had a full plate camera, he had, a half plate camera, those are the old photographic plates, 2 quarter plate cameras and something else. But he had all these cameras set up, and Katie King would materialize. She would muffle or cover Florence Cook's head with a shawl, cover her face to prevent the light being used in the photographs from falling upon her face. Apparently it would bother her. I frequently drew the curtain to one side when Katie was standing near, and it was a common thing for the 7 or 8 of us in the laboratory to see Miss Cook and Katie at the same time under the full blaze of the electric light. We did not on these occasions actually see the face of the medium because of the shawl over, but we saw her hands and her feet. We saw her move uneasily under the influence of the intense light, and we heard her even moan occasionally. I have one photograph of the two of them together, but Katie is seated in front of Miss Cook's head in this particular picture. And it goes on from there. But this is interesting, because here it is clearly an issue of protection of the medium.
That's right. Imagine the sophisticated equipment we now have, so we haven't got to bother anything like covering the medium's head. But that's what happened when the etheric people materialized at the Rita Gould experiment. They kept on going over to Rita Gould and saying, we'll just check the medium. We'll just go over and have a look at her and make sure she's all right. And then they come back and say, oh, yes, we've got another 5 minutes or so. So they're all the time they're looking at the medium to make sure she's okay. And that fits in with what Katie King said about Florence Cook, didn't it?
Indeed. Okay. By the way, Florence Cook stayed with Mr. and Mrs. Crooks for weeks during these seances.
That's right, yes. And she actually took part in these experiments, took part in Sir William Crookes' own laboratory in his house.
And he would lock the door, and he had the only key to it, and so on and so forth. So
yes.
It's amazing.
Then Professor Charles Richer then carried out these experiments, as you know, and he said there is ample proof that experimental materializations should take definite rank as a scientific fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hell of a statement from a Nobel laureate for medicine.
Oh, extraordinary statement.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So he witnessed the same thing as Crookes, and he knew damn well that we're dealing with a genuine phenomena here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have just about 4 minutes left, and so much more to talk about, but are there things that you want to warn people about not doing in this field? There are those who have the sense of what's going on and who do try to get in touch with the other side, and it sometimes can be a little risky. We don't,
yes,
on this program, like the idea of Ouija boards at all, because you're opening the door to things that you can't control or understand.
Yes, you must remember that the people in the next world are exactly the same as the people on Earth. There's no difference whatsoever. Now, you be terribly careful who you let into your house on Earth, and you have to be just as careful about contacting people in the etheric world using Ouija boards and this type of thing, because it lets in the rotten characters closest to the Earth's vibrations, so they tell us. It's only hearsay, but it's hearsay, Jeff, that makes sense to me.
Does indeed.
They can easily take over a Ouija board. You can make contact with your loved ones because you're getting all the family codes through the Ouija board, but suddenly the damn thing starts swearing. And you know very well that your loved one wouldn't do that to you. But all that's happened is they've been pushed aside, and somebody closest to the Earth's vibrations have been able to take over that Ouija board. So that's why we warn people not to do that. And you must also be terribly skeptical about everything that comes through. When you're getting the family code words and everything, that's fine. You know jolly well that your loved one's there working through the medium.
Mm-hmm.
But still be, always remain skeptical at all times. That's a good rule of thumb to keep in mind.
Well, Brad Steiger and I...
Not skeptical about survival.
No.
Skeptical about what people are saying from the etheric world.
Exactly.
Because once you start firing in questions at them, it all becomes hearsay. We'll have to wait until we get into the next world ourselves to find out whether all this hearsay is correct or not.
They also, as you say, the people who tend to hang around and take advantage are of a lower vibrational level, closer to the Earth itself, the Earth plane, if you will.
Well, that's why I like that film Ghost. I mean, that covered that pretty well in that film Ghost,
mm-hmm,
with Debbie Moore and Patrick Swayze. They gave the warning about rotten people in the etheric world. I think that did well. You saw that, did you, Jeff, the film Ghost?
A long time ago.
Yeah, it's a very good film.
The warning that Brad and I have given, so all of you take note, is again underwritten here by Michael Roll. Don't mess with Ouija boards. It's just not worth it. They're not toys. And I was sad to have seen about a year ago in a store, they have, believe it or not, a pre-teenage version of Ouija boards for little kids, Michael, which I thought was pretty disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to
do
that.
Never mind, we're warning people, and they'll be very careful now. We're hitting millions with this broadcast, so I hope they take notice.
Well, that was a very eloquent statement, and it is coming up on 6 a.m. in the U.K. for all of you here in the States. Michael has been up since 4 a.m., and I salute you. I don't know how you do it, but you're marvelous, as always.
I'm just about to jump in my car and go to Birmingham now, where my grandchildren are. I'm babysitting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my son and his wife are working, like most young couples do. So I go along as the 7th Cavalry, as the babysitter.
Well, have a good cup of tea or two, some strong tea to make sure you stay awake.
The adrenaline's running, so I'll be okay. It's only an hour up the road.
Last comment, Michael, from you tonight?
Well, only that I hope we've given comfort to all the millions of people out there who have lost loved ones. And that's every one of us. It's only a temporary tragedy. We all survive death, and we're all immediately reunited with our loved ones who have gone before us. What hope that gives to people, instead of the dreadful idea of the orthodox science of when you're dead, mate, you're dead.
Michael,
that's the message.
You summed it up beautifully. Thank you so much again for the visit. I'll continue to be here to help you in any way I can.
Thank you, Jeff.
Good night, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Michael Roll, live from the UK. All right, that's our program tonight. We're going to pause just for 21 hours and be right back with you tomorrow night. See you then.